From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the fifth day of November 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Jackie Vakes is out of the office this afternoon. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hear all about the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana, and discuss a white paper released by the United States Environmental Protection Agency as it relates to neonicotinoids, in particular to soybean seed treatments. That with Mike Gray from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
By the way, the numbers settled up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. December corn at $3.70 and a quarter cents, up 5 3/4. The March at $3.83, 5 3/4 higher. In May, up 5 3/4 at $3.91 3/4. July futures $3.98 and a half, up 5 3/4. December corn of next year, $4.14, up 6 1/4 for the day. Soy complex bean futures up 10 1/2 in the lead option. Harvest month November at $10.20 1/2. January at $10.19 1/4, up 9 1/2, and the March futures at $10.24 1/4, 9 3/4 higher. May contract in the soybeans, $10.29 1/4, up 9 3/4. July at $10.33, up 9 cents. And November beans at $10.04, up 5 3/4 cents. Bean meal finished at $3.75.30, up $2.80. And the bean oil at $32.72, down 35 cents. Chicago wheat in the July 5 3/4 lower. That actually the December contract at $5.24 3/4. July down 4 3/4 at $5.50. For the soft red, the hard red, lead option December down 5 3/4 at $5.84 1/2. July at $5.86, down 5 1/4 cents. Livestock futures, live cattle now $165.30 in the lead. December down $1.35. February down $1.35 as well. Feeder cattle finished the November $1.70 lower, $235.42 1/2. In January, $2.50 1/2 cents lower. And lean hogs in the lead option December were down 45 cents at $87.52 1/2. Now on the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural commodity markets is Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. He's filling in this afternoon for Jackie Vakes, who is out of the office. Chip, thanks for being with us. Tell us about the marketplace and what happened in Chicago in particular, why the corn pit managed to rally.
We started corn higher, and that drug everything off the lows, and we were able to end higher on the day. I think part of it may be a little bit of a wet forecast. Not terribly wet, but just enough nagging rainfall to maybe slow the last third of corn harvest down. That may be more than anything, why we saw some of this strength today in the corn market.
Strength today in the corn market, but beans followed suit, not in lockstep, but they were up too.
Well, they were, and again, same issue there. I think we're mostly beyond this soy meal short covering squeeze or short bought squeeze, if you want to call it that, with the rail situation. But yet, we haven't seen a big back off yet on interior meal basis. So, we ran up so far so fast, we were overdue for a correction. We got that, but there's still some underlying support in this market and kind of a buy the dip mentality. And, but I think if it weren't for the corn market, maybe we have a little different result today. In the big picture, though, we've got this crop report coming out Monday, and that may be the biggest short-term price dictator of anything.
What are your expectations from the WASDE figures?
Well, I think history tells you big crops get bigger. I don't know if that'll be a huge shock to the market, but yet, with that being said, we're likely looking at, record corn, record bean meal. So the supply situation is really what's going to hang over this market. I think there's some in the industry that think maybe we're going to see a cut again in acreage. I'm probably not in that camp, but we can always see shocks in the USDA. History's proven that as well. So I think overall, probably slight increases in yields. Demand's big enough that, now the problem's going to be those yield increases are mostly going to fall to the bottom line carryout. So I would think it's not a wildly bearish report, but yet I doubt if there's going to be anything really bullish there to cause people to want to continue to buy this thing.
Farmers, I believe, have begun to feel a bit better about the marketplace. I don't know that I'd call them bullish. On the other hand, it appears much of the trade remains surprised that the market has had such staying power over the last month, or even rallying power in some cases. Will we see a dip lower into November and December, do you suppose?
Well, I've been in that camp, quite honestly. I've been a little bit surprised by the strength. It makes sense with what's happened in the logistical problems with meal, but I've been in that same camp being really pretty surprised at the strength we've seen. I think, again, though, it goes back to supply in my mind, and we're looking at a big, big crop here. So it's, in my mind, different than the last 5 or 6 years where carryout's been tighter and demand's been really good. We know demand's good, but now our supply is kind of overwhelming us. So in my mind, and I don't think we have to see a sharp move lower, but I would think we're more in just kind of a grinding lower, sideways to lower market. And that's just based on the fact that eventually farmers are going to have to move this big crop, into the year, into the end of December and the first part of the new year. Typically is when you'd expect to see some bushels hit the market. And, you know, without a big bullish move out of a weather problem in South America or continuing logistics problems, I think that's what's going to weigh on the market and cause, maybe a tailing off into the end of the year.
Are you convinced that it's an overwhelming supply for both corn and soybeans?
Well, when I take a step back and look at where we're probably going to shake out, and again, I'm making some assumptions here.
Okay.
I'm assuming that the yield's going to get slightly bigger, and I don't know if the USDA, on both corn and beans, mm-hmm. I don't know if the USDA can increase demand enough to offset that. So I'm assuming we're going to be somewhere 2.1, 2.2 billion bushel corn carryout. And on beans, somewhere 450 or north, those are big, big numbers. And, yes, there's large demand. And yes, farmers are going to, try to hold this crop off the market a little bit. When I look at that compared to years past, I'm looking at a fairly ample supply. So not that the market doesn't have any rally potential, but it's hard to just get super, super bulled up with, a 2+ billion bushel corn carryout and what could be, depending on final bean yields, close to or at least north of a 450 million bushel bean carryout. Those are pretty big numbers.
So you're really not looking for much of a change, maybe another 100 million bushels increase in corn?
On this report, you mean, or
overall, by the time we get to the end of the year for the ending stocks number, we're at 2.081 now, and you're at 2.1 to 2.12.
Yep, anywhere between 2.1 and 2.3. I think the total supply could be raised a little more than that, but they will try to manipulate demand a little bit and bump that up. So I think the market has done a good job of digesting these big numbers, but yet, I still come back. Take a step back and try to say, all right, where are we at? It's a fairly large carryout. That would put us one of the top 5 or 6 biggest stocks to use ratios on corn of the last 20 years. Certainly a lot different than when we were looking at 7, 8, 9% stocks to use ratio in the last 2 or 3 years.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us and for filling in this afternoon.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. He is in Morton, Illinois, joins us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Normally, Jackie Vakes would be with us. She is out of the office on this afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In today's agricultural news, the Republicans have taken control of the Senate. The move could bode well for agriculture, according to some. With Republican control in both the U.S. Senate and the House, that could slow the overregulation concerns by agriculture stemming from the Obama administration, among other parts of the current administration's agenda, according to the Washington Post. Republicans could target the Environmental Protection Agency and its proposed Waters of the U.S. rule, opposed by many large agricultural groups, folks who call the proposal an overreach in power by the EPA. Well, the Denver Business Journal reports the ballot measure in Colorado that would have required GMO labeling has failed. Voters struck down Proposition 105 during Tuesday's midterm elections. In Oregon, voters saw a last-minute flow of campaign funding for and against a similar issue, according to the Oregonian, coming from food companies fighting the initiative and from out-of-state billionaires. Voters in California rejected mandatory labeling 2 years ago, and a similar effort in Washington state failed last year. Vermont is the only state that has a mandate on GMO labeling. The law is scheduled to take effect in 2016, but has been challenged in court. And finally today, this note on E15, or ethanol at 15% blends, an analysis of new vehicle warranty statements by the Renewable Fuels Association found automakers approve of E15 use in approximately two-thirds of all new vehicles. Based on the latest vehicle sales and market share data, nearly 63% of the 2015 model year vehicles are approved by their manufacturer for E15 use. When coupled with expected flex fuel vehicle production, it's estimated that E15 will be allowed in close to 70% of the 2015 model year vehicles. RFA President Bob Dineen says this should send a clear message to the EPA and Congress that E15 is here and ready. By the way, the analysis also found Honda Motor Company has extended E15 warranty coverage to all models in 2015, and all Toyota models in 2015 include explicit E15 approval. Further, they found General Motors approves the use of E15 in all models for the fourth year in a row, as Ford does the same for the third year in a row. Audi, Jaguar, Land Rover, Porsche, and Volkswagen also expressly approved the use of E15 in their 2015 models. The Chrysler Group did not approve E15 use in its owner's manuals. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Cannot tell you how excited I am about the upcoming Farm Assets Conference at the end of this month in Normal, Illinois. That's at the Marriott Hotel. They asked us this week if we could give them some numbers, and we will do that. But I'd like to have you included in that, so if you can call today and get your tickets, it would be really helpful. 800-898-1065. Ticket sales have gone very well. Just need to know how many people are going to be there, so I'd like to have you order tickets today. 800-898-1065. If you want to go to the Farm Assets Conference, or online at willag.org. They're just $25. Should be a fantastic day. Starts about 10:15 in the morning, runs till 5 in the evening, so you've got plenty of time to get there and then go back home. And it will include the new meal and the parking for the $25 cost. Again, that's the Farm Assets Conference, the 24th day of November. Call right now at 800-898-1065. Now up next, U.S. EPA has released a document critical of soybean seed treatments used right here in the United States. It suggests farmers have been spending money and getting very little benefit in return. Farmers in the United States will harvest about 83 million acres of soybeans this year. The crop is grown primarily in the Mississippi River Valley watershed from New Orleans to St. Paul. And like all valuable crops, farmers do a lot to protect it. However, U.S. EPA, based on an economic analysis of one of those things, believes farmers are wasting money. The agency suggests neonicotinoid, insecticidal soybean seed treatments are mostly prophylactic in nature. It looked at academic analysis, part of which was done at the University of Illinois, to come to this conclusion. University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray's work is cited in the paper.
And the result of that analysis was pretty clear that there was no economic advantage for a producer to use these neonicotinoids, again, insecticidal seed treatments, on their soybean seed.
One of the most popular of these seed treatments, as an example, is produced by Bayer Crop Sciences. The U.S. EPA report pegged the cost of using a neonicotinoid soybean seed treatment at about $7.50 an acre.
So when you look at the economics and then weigh in any potential negative environmental benefits, it seems pretty clear that I think producers should consider very carefully whether or not they need to make that investment.
EPA thinks farmers can efficiently defend against insecticide pests later in the growing season on an as-needed basis. Mike Gray, as an agricultural entomologist, plainly says farmers can save a lot of money by not using a soybean seed treatment prophylactically, or just because they can.
This is an input that really many growers regard as an insurance plan. Yet, if growers are willing to go out and scout fields and utilize rescue treatments and apply insecticides as needed in soybeans when a certain defoliation level is reached, that is a much preferred strategy. Soybeans, as it turns out, tend to be very resilient. They can withstand a fair amount of defoliation, and even some early season stand reductions can be compensated for.
In a far more economical fashion, it takes some legwork. The fields need to be scouted and treated when necessary. The end result, however, should be a soybean harvest that costs less to produce. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can buy your tickets for our Farm Assets Conference. That is coming up on the 24th day of November. Call today if you'd like tickets at 800-898-1065. Now let's check the cash grain market. Stephen Linneber is on the phone line from the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Stephen. Thanks for being with us. We have trucks in line today, or did the rain stall everything in your area?
A little slower day compared to average. A little behind.
Yeah, so you still have some corn left, I suppose, to pick, and farmers are in the soybeans fields, but I suspect most everything is gone.
Around this drought territory, we're easily thinking maybe 10% left on beans to get finished up, and probably still working around a 60% average for this drought territory and being done on corn.
What was your feeling about Chicago today and why corn was able to maintain a rally?
I mean, feeling your guess as good as mine, honestly, Todd. I mean, it's been an up-and-down type of a situation to where, I mean, we still feel like the market responding to the bushels not hitting the news wire, you know, from a harvest progress report, still feeling like there's some corn that needs to be bought. So I feel like the market not really wanting to let this slip too far away until we get a better handle on what's going to really be there from a production standpoint.
Of your turn there in the elevator, how much goes into the ethanol plant in the year on a percentage basis, and how much do you ship out? And do you do most of that by rail or truck?
Everything from this standpoint, if we're going to do anything rail here at the ethanol plant, it's via the actual ethanol.
Right.
Everything that comes in here bushel-wise gets converted to that or some type of byproduct. Very, very little on truck other than DDGs.
Oh, I see. I've forgotten that you were actually at the ethanol facility.
Yeah, that's
as opposed
correct.
To the
I mean, from a Delphi perspective, I mean, majority of it needs to be on rail, but we've had to kind of turn to truck here as of late, just with a little bit of the logistics side of the rail not helping us.
What are processors thinking about soybeans in the local area?
Definitely fulfilled a need here as of late with us last weekend, got a major amount of beans cut. I think the beans are there to process, the beans are there to crush for meal. It's the amount of, goes back to the idea, can we get them on rail and get them to the places that need it, and especially on the East Coast, which we kind of attest to the initial rally in this market a week ago was from that high meal demand, just not being able to get it when I think it was still there.
What are your expectations for basis over the next 2 weeks for corn and soybeans?
I think soybeans probably continue to stay solid until we really figure out where we are in terms of harvest and production that way. I think corn has a tendency to want to get a little stronger here as we're seeing a lot of bushels go to the bin because we're a little wetter and the farmer wants to take that shrink rather than the elevator. And I think to get bushels into the elevator, probably wouldn't be surprised to see basis firm up a little.
And your bids there at Climbers?
Climbers cash corn at the close was $3.42.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Stephen Linneber of the Anderson's Climbers facility, the ethanol plant near Logansport, Indiana. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Donut Day. The arrival of donuts in the U.S. has a disputed history. One theory has Hanson Gregory inventing the ring-shaped donut in 1847 while traveling aboard a lime trading ship. Another theory points at archaeological evidence that donuts were prepared by prehistoric Native Americans in the Southwest. On this day in agricultural history in 1854, Paul Sabatier was born. A French organic chemist, he researched catalytic organic synthesis. The margarine and methanol industries grew out of his research. In 1893, Raymond Loewy was born. An American design engineer, he designed the Coca-Cola bottle, the 1934 Sears Cold Spot refrigerator, and toothbrushes, among other items. But he is perhaps best known as the father of streamlining for his work on a number of automobiles, including the 1947 Studebaker Starlight Coupe. In 1963, Viking ruins were found by archaeologists in Newfoundland, dating back to around the year 1000. Most historians believe that Leif Erikson, second son of Eric the Red, was the first European to reach the New World, some 500 years before Columbus. And in 2000, David Ross Brower died. Brower was the founder of many agricultural organizations, including the Friends of the Earth and Earth Island Institute. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here now from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and has an update of the weather forecast. Looks like it's going to finally turn a lot cooler, though last week was, about 5 degrees below average here in Illinois. And I don't know, looks like it's going to get colder this week.
Yeah, you know, I keep trying to remind myself that it's November now. I think I'm lagging behind here by about 6 weeks. It seems like it ought to be maybe mid-September or something. But it is getting cold. I mean, we've got an impressive cold air mass actually coming down from Canada that will settle into the northern plains and parts of the Midwest as we get into the end of this coming weekend and into early next week. And it's definitely going to be winter-like. We'll probably have some significant snow that will precede the cold, maybe impacting parts of maybe the Dakotas, Iowa, part of Nebraska, and then over to Michigan and parts of Wisconsin. We may see some snow showers further to the south. That probably won't be a very significant event. But the temperatures, well, they will bottom out in the single digits and teens across the Dakotas and Minnesota. And the heart of the Midwest will certainly be in 20s. And it wouldn't be surprising at all to see some teens occur in some of the northern parts of the region as we get into the early to middle part of next week. Now, this is an air mass that's still a week away, so we have to be careful not to just buy into the pure model data. There's a pretty good chance that the air mass will be somewhat moderated from what's being advertised. But nevertheless, it'll still be the coldest week of our season, I think.
I see by the forecast and by the radar that the rains that were expected to come into the Delta region in southern Illinois have arrived today. Will they dump very much?
Well, I think it kind of depends on location. There will be a fair amount of moisture there, but not nearly as much as what has occurred in Texas and Oklahoma the past couple of days. And if you recall, some of those areas have been very dry. I think the drought that had been occurring in southeastern parts of the Texas Panhandle into southern Oklahoma and north central Texas in the last few weeks has probably been as intense as anything we saw earlier in this year and on into past years. But they did pick up on amounts running 3/4 inch to 2 inches out that way, and the winter wheat crop is now at least has a much better chance of establishing in those areas. For the Delta, though, indeed it is raining now. It probably will continue to rain for a while yet for the next 24 hours. Probably some light to moderate amounts, though. I think a half to maybe 1.5 inches of rain will occur down that way, and the rest of the Midwest will probably be left out. I think we'll see a little bit of precipitation across the northernmost parts of the region, but any areas from Missouri into Illinois, Indiana, Ohio will probably be free and clear of meaningful precipitation for a while.
as we make our way through our last minute, the Southern Hemisphere.
Well, it certainly looks like Brazil is trying desperately to come out of its drier bias. We've seen some scattered showers here recently. Rains are still below average, and they still need to see a much more organized rain event take place. And it's going to be hard to come by for a while, but scattered showers and thunderstorms will be a routine, and the situation will get much better. Argentina had a big soaking across the heart of their corn and soybean production areas last weekend, and they're looking very good right now, with the exception of a few spots in the northwest, which are still dry. And then we're still worried about parts of Australia, of course, with their drought going on in the eastern parts of the country. That will be ongoing for some of their cotton and sorghum crop there.
Thank you so much.
All right, you have a good day.
You too. That, of course, Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.